For September 8th, 2016, it's the Lullabot Podcast. Everybody, it's the Lullabot Podcast, episode 195, or something like that. It might be 195. I don't know. It's the live edition yet again.
Yes, sir.
I'm Matt Cleave, a senior developer at Lullabot. Alongside me, as always, co-host, front-end dev, Mike Herschel. Hey, Mike.
Good evening.
Good evening. Good morning, wherever you may be. That's another talk show or something. So, hey, so we're still at the Lullabot retreat, although we're really not, like...
It's been like 3 weeks here.
Yeah, I know. No, we've been here for a week, but we happened to record a few podcasts while we were together, which we thought was a good idea when we're face-to-face with all of our coworkers and we have the opportunity to see them, because Lullabot is a distributed company. We're all over the country, and we can meet some of the fine people who are all over the world.
Yeah, get together, do pair programming, designing logos and cool stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. We have the chance to learn all kinds of really great skills while we're here and learn from each other, which is really important. So this is normally a Drupal podcast, wouldn't you say, Mike?
Normally, yes.
Yeah, so because Lullabot is really kind of a Drupal company. We're a strategy, design, and development company. We build websites. We create digital experiences for some of the world's best brands. At least,
that is our tagline. But I didn't hear Drupal in the tagline.
Well, it's not always, I suppose, because we do have some people who are at Lullabot who aren't doing Drupal. They've probably done Drupal at some point in their careers, or currently they just happen to be doing other cool things. They're working with great technology that isn't Drupal.
Do we like these people?
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's meet some of these people. First, across the table from me, we have a Lullabot developer known as Mini Robot. She's been on Drupal.org for almost 5.5 years. But previous to coming to Lullabot, she worked with Titanium at AppCelerator. She was one of those mobile apps type people. She worked on cross-platform app development for 2 years from London in the United Kingdom. It's Betty Tran. Hey, Betty.
Hey.
Hey, Betty. So what are you? You're doing, you've done some React?
Yes, I've used React for 3 different projects now.
3 different projects using React, and that's really cool. You're also doing some Samsung TV app development?
Yes. Well, we're really using React for that. So yes, that's one of the other React projects.
So cool. I didn't know there were Samsung TV apps. Did you, Mike?
Yeah, me neither. My TV is not that cool.
it's the big one, right? And you have to like walk up and change the channels. You don't have
a... Like 1950, leave it to Beaver. All right, next we have Lullabot's senior systems administrator. He is Lullabot's secret weapon, and that's like the truth. Without this man, Lullabot would just... I don't even want to think about it. He's formerly from the web hosting world, and he is a Nebraskan now living in Texas. Welcome, Ben Chavez.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing good.
So, Ben, you're a sysadmin and who works at Lullabot. Lullabot does a lot of Drupal stuff, so you make sure our servers keep running, but you've also built a couple of products and a number of different technologies.
That's true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We talked about Tugboat on the podcast a month or two ago, right?
Has it been that long?
Probably longer,
yeah,
actually.
Longer, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tugboat's cool.
So Tugboat was a pull request generator to help the QA process, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and so what is actually happening? Like, what Tugboat runs on?
It's written in Node.js, and it uses Docker for the back end.
Okay. Next, here at the table, we have another person from London in the United Kingdom, but, you know, you can actually probably find him traveling elsewhere much of the rest of the time. He's known as Fenda. He's a senior developer at Lullabot who's worked on the MSNBC project and Penguin and other projects for Lullabot. He's done Drupal for too long, but he got so bored, and now he's in love with React, at least so he tells me. He also has a book that he's written called Frontend Fundamentals.
And this person has also just finished speaking at ForwardJS in San Francisco on React Native.
That's correct.
It's Joe Fender. Hey, Joe.
Hey, thank you.
So what's it like being a Drupal guy who's speaking at a JavaScript conference?
It's like you feel like an imposter for sure.
Yeah.
I've been working on Drupal for way too long, like you just said.
Yeah.
And what seems to often happen with our clients at Lullabot is... You start out working on Drupal, we do
a pretty decent job, I hope. And then they ask us to come back when they've got another project. But wait, it's not Drupal. So this has happened for the people that sit at this table with us, and it's probably going to happen with more bots moving forward. And I was lucky enough to be one of those guys that got pulled in for another project and got to learn new cool stuff, which happened to be React.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Welcome, Joe.
Thank you.
So the next person here has been on Drupal.org for 7 years. His name is on Drupal.org is Mac Angus. He's a senior developer here at Lullabot from Ottawa in Canada. He is a dog trainer and great fisherman. He has actually caught a fish here at the retreat, and by, from the looks of it, it was, I don't know, like 4 inches long, 5 inches, something like that.
I think that's metric.
That translates into a couple meters, I believe. This person has worked on MSNBC, Grammys, NBC, Jimmy Fallon, SNL, Pac-12, Tech Guy Labs, and probably several more that are like super secret. Welcome, Angus Mack.
Hi.
Hey, Angus. Doing? So what are you doing these days? You're doing iOS development,
yeah,
I understand?
Yeah, I'm working on an app. iOS development is actually quite cool.
So Swift or the old school stuff?
Swift. We do get to work with Objective-C a little bit, but most of it we bridge Objective-C into Swift. So we get to use some Objective-C frameworks, but the development itself is in Swift.
Cool. That's awesome. That's a totally different change from Drupal, because you've done lots of Drupal too.
It's very different, but it's a very good kind of different.
So also here at the table with us, we had to bring back this guy who's now been on like 5 different podcasts because he's so cool. He's been on Drupal.org for 7 years. He's a maintainer of the RESTful plug. RESTful, how do you say this? Maintainer of the RESTful module? Plug? What's plug?
Oh, plug. Plug is a kind of cool module, I hope.
Okay, it's the plug module on Drupal.org?
Yeah, that ported the plugin technology from Drupal 8 to Drupal 7 just because...
Whoa.
Yeah, I couldn't wait.
Okay.
So I did that, yeah.
Cool. He's the author of the JSON API module for Drupal 8 and Simple OAuth for Drupal 8. He's from the Spanish island of Majorca in the Mediterranean Sea. Professional sunbather and really cool developer.
And you forgot professional sun... No, you said that, right?
Yes, I did. I wouldn't forget professional sunbather.
You forgot. Yeah.
Added that to your title last time, so I figured I had to.
Ah, shit.
Yeah, all right. So what are you doing these days that isn't Drupal?
I do a couple of Node.js apps.
Okay.
And they kind of sit in front of the thing that I usually do with Drupal, which is exposing RESTful services.
Sure, those are the modules that you're maintaining, so
yeah.
It makes sense, right?
And yeah, it's kind of a data pipeline style of line of work.
Yeah, so let's talk. So some of the cool stuff here is, let's talk about Samsung app development, since I'm sure a lot of people are like me and don't even know that's a thing.
Yeah, I didn't realize it. I knew there were smart TVs. I just never was cool enough to have
them.
So Samsung TVs have their own app environment.
So
build a center.
I may be completely wrong here.
Okay.
So
well,
feel free to correct me.
You've known more than I do. So.
So as far as I'm aware, Samsung has had a smart TV environment for a while, where you can put apps onto the smart TVs. But they were built in an OS called Orsay.
Samsung had this OS called what?
It's called Orsay, O-R-S-A-Y.
Okay.
And you could build apps for it, but it was really, really, really hard.
And a lot of people didn't end up doing it.
And nobody bothered, right?
Okay.
So they brought out a new platform for building apps on the smart TV called Tizen. Some of you may have heard of that.
Hey.
I heard Tizen has a cool website. Is that true?
Yeah.
I heard it's Drupal. Do you know who made that?
I heard Lullabot made that website.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So Mateo, were you on that?
No.
You were making faces.
No. I thought you.
No, it sure wasn't me. No. There was a number of bots. Angus?
Nope.
Oh, jeez. I guess none of us. Oh, Ben. Ben Chavez had a hand in the Tizen project.
I wrote the simple LDAP Drupal module for that project.
That's
also where Tugboat started.
The guy who isn't the Drupal guy. So the simple LDAP Drupal module ended up being a part of the Tizen project. The Tizen project turns into an OS that goes on Samsung TVs.
It does indeed.
That now Joe Fender is writing apps for.
Yeah, so we're coming in for one of our clients, and they asked us to build this app for Tizen. What's really great about Tizen is you have two options when you build an app. You either build it with their native code, which I have no idea what it is, or you can build a web app. that gets bundled up and installed on smart TVs.
Okay.
So that's what we're doing. We're building a web app, and it, we can use whatever web technologies that we want. So obviously we chose React. The only thing is the app, the web app has to be static. There's no server. So you've got to build this static local app using React.
So you said obviously we chose React, but maybe that decision isn't so obvious to a number of people. So why would you use React.js?
Well, the main reason is because we'd already been using it with that client. Okay. And React is meant to be a learn once, write anywhere. And I'm doing quotation marks on my fingers here.
Well, sure.
And in practice, it usually works like that. You learn it once, and then the developers can be reused on different platforms, but using React. So that's what we did. So we borrowed a lot from what we used before, and we decided just to do it on a different platform.
And the Samsung TV app project, Betty, you're a part of that as well. It sounds a lot like your previous work when you were doing Titanium apps, right? I mean, you're kind of using this other technology and plugging it into something else. Am I wrong?
Well, it's similar in the sense that we are using JavaScript.
Sure.
But it's not the same at all.
Okay.
Since with React, it's actually, it's a web page, it's a website. Whereas the cross-platform work I did previously on Titanium, that was writing in JavaScript and then being compiled into native code for either the Android or iOS platform.
Okay. I was thinking of some other phone developer thing that you did. Maybe not you did, but somebody did.
Phone Gap.
Was it you? Yeah, Phone Gap type thing. I guess I was confused with the other like universal app developer software, right?
Yeah, so the distinction that you have to make with React is it's not write once, run everywhere. It's like what Joe said. You learn it once and you can use it to, just write any app. Really. And there's also React Native, which is, that's also a JavaScript thing, but that's for the native apps.
And you've written a React Native article that is on lullabot.com.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, so you've done some React Native work as well.
Yes, so that was for a discovery, and we were checking out if React Native was a feasible option.
And?
So, well, we concluded that at the time, because React Native was still in its early days, it wasn't quite suitable. But I would definitely consider using it for, a future project.
Sure, as with any technology, stuff changes, things improve, right? The times they are changing.
Yeah, React Native is awesome.
Oh, we're gonna come up to defend it, huh?
Yeah.
Joe, did your did Forward.js record the presentations?
I believe it did. At the moment, it's not up. They asked me for a screen recording, and I was like, I didn't take a screen recording. So I'm not sure if that's going to mean I don't get the recording up. I think they got the video. I'm not sure how the audio is going to work or screen or whatever. But yeah, if we find it, we can post the link in the podcast. But yeah, React Native is really good. And
that's what your talk was about?
It was indeed. Okay. Yeah, I built a React Native app and released one about 2 months ago now.
Was this a Lullabot thing, or was this a...
No, this is just like a side hobby thing.
A Fenda project.
This is like, I'm going to get rich, let me build an app thing. And then I released it, and no one downloaded it. I'm not rich.
So. What's the app? Here's your chance.
It's called Kiowa. It's a language learner app.
Ooh.
You're going to have like 6 more users now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did our listener base increase, Mike?
So you can chat with other people that are learning the same language as you, and it's free, and you can paste emojis and all that fun stuff with chat. So, yeah, it's a cool way to learn a language.
Angus, you're also doing some mobile development, which is totally in a different world. So iOS, you're doing native iOS development.
Yes,
for
I
a
am.
Client, and is that's kind of a different world.
It's quite different, especially coming from a Drupal background.
Yeah. What other types of technologies did you work with before Drupal?
Worked on a React project with Joe.
You've been on a React project, but how do you enjoy working with Swift? Do you like that better than, say, JavaScript programming or Drupal programming? What's your thoughts on that?
It's a very different type of programming. So, programming in React kind of makes me think differently, just because in
the underlying technology is a little bit different. You have to worry about different like memory management and stuff like that. And especially having building an app that doesn't work in a browser has like its own challenges. You have to think about like the memory that is available to you. You have to worry about things that you normally take for granted, like a form, and you have to build it in the native language.
Sure, you don't get Drupal form API. I mean, right? We can't just build big arrays and have awesome forms and validation and submit methods that just happen to run. I mean, honestly, I think that's a benefit to Drupal as far as web stuff goes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's like the power of Drupal right there. It's a content management system, if you will.
And a really kind of cool form builder, right?
Some will say so.
Okay.
You can ask Eaton.
Okay. Mateo, let's hear a little bit about Node. So a lot of, you know, people think about Node being the cool thing. Gosh, 3-4 years ago, everybody's like, oh, we don't need this Drupal stuff. Let's just build everything in Node. So you're doing that, but still using Drupal at the same time.
Yeah, no. Definitely the cool thing is Drupal.
Okay.
And, but, you know, it's sometimes it's just not enough. And so we're using Node.js in the sense that we are exposing web services. And in this sense, I work with most of these guys, and I'm serving them. So in a way, I'm just pleasing their data needs. And in front of the web services that we build in Drupal, because as Mike said, this Drupal is an awesome content management system. We are aggregating all the data sources. And in front of Drupal, we place these Node.js apps that act as a proxy. And we can do things like caching requests in Redis and this cool stuff that you were saying.
Sure. So decoupled Drupal, I guess, is really kind of what you're doing, right? That's the buzzword for it.
This is what we're doing.
So the content management is happening within Drupal. Drupal then exposes web services that return JSON or XML or whatever that other things consume, like your really cool Node app.
Yeah, exactly. So we're using Drupal in this case as a way to build our content model. And with that, we have the editors populating that. And we allow all of these technologies to make queries to our service, and we place some of these Node.js apps in between the React app or the Roku app or whatever app and Drupal.
So Node is sitting between an app and Drupal?
Yeah.
So it's almost like we're creating MVC with Drupal, Node, and then whatever else you want to put on top of it?
Maybe.
I don't know. I just thought maybe, I mean, there were three things, so I thought three was the magic number. I don't know.
Well, definitely three is the magic number. In this case, what we're trying to accomplish is to bring some of the flexibility that these technologies offer in terms of being able to develop, to reuse skill sets. Like these guys were saying, JavaScript is everywhere these days, right? And it allows you to put something together really quickly. It allows you to even deploy some of this stuff easier than Drupal, because we love Drupal, but you know, it has some pain points.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Ben Chavez, let's. Now I know you're doing all kinds of interesting technologies with Tugboat. You've also worked a little bit with audio, right? As far as like phone systems, and Lullabot has a phone system it uses, it's built for its own use, and you know, lots of different technologies. Ben, tell me what kinds of things are interesting you these days.
I deal with a lot of technologies. So currently, we're doing a lot with Node.js. Docker is really hot, and the Tugboat UI actually uses React, so I've got that in common with some people here.
That's like all the buzzwords right
there. I know,
there,
right?
Like Ben's over there with his sunglasses just being cooler than the rest of us.
Yeah. What else?
So, yeah, we're taking it back a little bit because he called you cooler than everybody else. Yeah. Wow, I've never considered that.
Okay, I'll just leave it at that.
So what about what about the phone software, like outside of Tugboat? Assuming people know what Tugboat is, you know, built on React, Docker, and Node, it's a pull request builder.
Tugboat.qa, take a look.
Yeah, and it's completely awesome. It's changed our workflow. Tell us about this other software, Ampersand.
Yeah, so that's a project that I worked on a couple years ago now. It was for Lullabot. We were just kind of experimenting with what would it look like if we had a phone system. It being a distributed company, that's, you know, an interesting challenge. We ended up with a conference system that we use all the time.
So there's a conference call number. You can create a conference call number with a different extension for you know, different rooms. And one thing that I really like is there's a visual aspect to the conference call.
Yeah, everything is all web based. So like as a user, I call into a conference call and I can see like what other phone numbers are logged in. You can associate those phone numbers with people, and even with like what is it, our LDAP accounts or something like that. And so we can get into, say, a conference call with a customer, and we can see, all right, well, Ben and Brian and so and this unknown number is already called in.
And then it highlights when they're talking, so you can kind of keep track of what's going on and who is.
Yeah. And we can also mute people if people do not mute themselves. And then everybody at this table has heard, you are now muted. And you're like, oh, shit.
It happens.
You can also kick people out, which is equally amusing.
Yeah, nice.
You've been removed from this conference.
I think it actually says you have been kicked from this conference. And it's just silent.
Nothing more. So, you know, Mike and I talked about maybe doing an Ampersand podcast at some point, just to kind of talk about what it's like to build a product as a services company, and it's a different world, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there were some big visions about how we could sell this and whatnot. It ended up just being something we use internally, which is fine.
Yeah, we use it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I heard it's going to change the world and solve pollution. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
One thing we haven't mentioned is, yes, it's a phone service, but the quality of the audio can be really good because I use the software Ben told me to set up in a certain way that Ben told me to set it up, and it like sounds better than the podcast.
Yeah, it's like a SIP client.
Yeah, so the server software is Asterisk, which is a really common phone server software.
Open source, right?
Yeah, open source. Yeah. And the codec that you're talking about, I'm drawing a blank on.
I believe it's Magic.
Magic, yeah. It starts with an O.
OAuth? No, that's nothing.
Holy cow, it's really sounds great.
I can't think of it. Running your own server, you can, you know, pick which codecs you want to support. So
nice.
Sounds great. It sounds great when everybody uses it. If somebody calls in a phone, it sounds like a phone.
So we're sitting around the table with some Lullabots who aren't working on Drupal. That means Lullabots like giving up on Drupal, right, Mike?
Yep. They're all kind of...
No, that's not the case. No, that's not the case. Lullabot is still a company that will build your website. We'll build it with Drupal. But as it turns out, we can be really good at other things, and we'll learn more about that coming up right after this.
Hi, Matt.
Hey, it's Chairman and Co-Founder Jeff Robbins. Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
And the former host of the Lullabot podcast.
It was a long time ago, Matt.
Hey, but you're doing a new one now.
I am. We just launched a new podcast called The Yonder Podcast.
Over Yonder.
Over Yonder. And people can find that at yonder.com. I.O.
Tell me about the Yonder podcast.
So, as you know, Matt, and probably many listeners know, Lullabot is a completely distributed company. For the past 10 years, we have...
Wait, you're not just down the hall?
Yeah, we've grown the company without a central office and done lots of great work for great clients and hired some really amazing people from all over the world. It's felt wonderful and magical over all this time. Actually, it all started with me thinking I should write a book about this. And then I initially thought, well, I should probably talk to some other people who are doing this kind of thing to see if they've got similar kinds of experiences. So we started doing the Yonder Conference. And for the past 3 years, we've run a conference and had people from really a wide variety of different types of distributed companies, remote. They all have different words for what they do. Some have called themselves virtual companies and telework and all that kind of stuff. And it's been a really great event. And I'm taking some time now to write a book. And also, we've launched this podcast as a way of kind of sharing these ideas with a larger audience and people who are remote curious, interested in this whole idea, but maybe kind of don't quite understand how it would work to have a whole team who worked from home or to sort of harness this new way of working. People refer to it oftentimes as the future of work, but it's unclear as I talk to people, leaders of brick and mortar companies, more conventional companies, they're oftentimes sort of stuck in trying to figure out how they would transition or how they would get the good parts that they enjoy about working together in an office with people. And so we started this podcast as a way of kind of sharing what works and even talking about what doesn't work, so that people can understand that.
Is it something that you've seen change since Lullabot has started as far as the perceptions of distributed work?
Yes, absolutely. I think when we started, it was something that we sort of tried to downplay a little bit. You know, it was like, oh, well, we don't have an office, but we're still legitimate and we're still good. And as we started to build up a portfolio and kind of be known for having like some of the top talent in the industry, I think people started kind of getting it. And what we realized was really this was a big asset rather than a problem and something to be hidden. It's still a little bit, you know, a lot of clients want to know where to send their lawyers when something goes wrong. You know, what door can they bang on to yell at you? But I think it's becoming more and more accepted and more people are working from home, you know, a few days a week from a conventional office environment. But really what we're talking about is diving in with both feet, fully remote teams and that kind of thing. So
yonder.io, probably the iTunes store too. Check it out.
Yep. You can find it on iTunes and Google Play and Stitcher. But it's all centered at yonder.io. If people go there, they can get on the mailing list and we'll send them a notice every time there's a new podcast that goes up. And yeah.
Thanks, Jeff. Was it fun getting your podcast gear all dusted off? And
it was, yes. It all came right back to me. editing podcasts. I had the opportunity to make a new theme song for a new podcast. So I think the Lullabot podcast music that you're still using,
absolutely,
is over 10 years old now and was the first podcast music that I made.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, Matt.
Welcome back. We're here at the Lullabot Designer and Developer Retreat, and we're talking to a number of Lullabot developers who are not doing Drupal.
That's because Lullabot quit Drupal, right?
Yes.
No, we didn't.
You tricked me again.
So Angus Mack is here, and Angus, how long have you been at Lullabot?
I've been with Lullabot for almost 4 years.
So Mike, how long have you been at Lullabot?
Over 2 years.
So do you remember doing the Project Euler stuff where we learned about different... Do you remember that, Angus? Can you explain
it?
Do you remember?
I do. It was basically a list of challenges. So each challenge you have to basically fix, you know, create some sort of algorithm to like fix a mathematical problem.
And they kind of turned into like classical computer science programs.
Right.
Like you figure out a way to solve the problem with math or a language construct or something. Yeah.
And the whole idea is you use the language that you're comfortable with or pick a language that you're not comfortable with and just go at it.
So one of the my early memories of Angus, because we weren't together on a project, Angus was solving one of these problems with some kind of really weird language that...
I think it was...
What were you using?
I think it was Racket or Scheme.
Okay.
And it's a procedural... Is it procedural?
It was procedural, and you, like, declared that you know, this was this way and this was this way, so it determined that the other was the other way based on what it knew.
It really messes with how you think.
Yeah. I was really impressed with you, Angus. It was like, holy crap, that Angus guy is super smart. It seems like he can program pretty much any kind of language, right?
Hopefully.
And that's kind of what we're seeing, right? Mr. iOS developer, Mr. Drupal developer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this kind of started, I don't know, what's it been, a couple of years now when we had a client come and say, hey, do you know how to build a Roku map?
No, I do not.
Oh. And you learned, though, right?
And I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me about building a Roku app. That's something that a couple of people at the table has a chance to learn.
Before we talk about building a Roku app, what is a Roku?
What is a Roku?
I have a Roku. So Roku is a small device about the size of your fist. It goes under your TV, and it hooks up to your TV through an HDMI cable. It obviously connects to the internet, and you can install apps on it. Like, so common apps would be like Netflix. There's a YouTube app. There used to be a Drupalized Me app for the Roku, but that has been discontinued. And there's a NASA app. There's a bunch of cool stuff. And, yeah, so Angus, you've been working on this.
Yeah, it has been a while, but the client basically just said, hey, we have this Roku app. Would you be interested in like helping out and work on this? And I was like, sure, why not? Something new. And, you know, not just Drupal, right?
Yeah. So tell me, what was it like to learn how to build a Roku app?
It's very different. And it's, you know, we talked about sometimes when you build things for the browser, you take things for granted. You take some of the memory management for granted. But for the Roku, it's, you know, obviously it has a lot less memory. You have to be careful about what you do. The language itself is a little bit, let's say, not as sophisticated as, you know, what JavaScript.
It's its own language, right?
It's a language called BrightScript. And I think it was actually invented by the founder of Roku. And so,
what a great idea, by the way.
To make your own programming language?
Yes.
I suppose there are some advantages to that, though, because it's only going to do so many things, and you kind of want to, I don't know, what do you think?
It's,
I was trying to defend it a little bit. So Joe, you've done some Roku work. What do you think?
Well, apparently, this may be not true at all. BrightScript was invented for vending machines.
Oh.
Yeah, I think the boss of that company or whatever, they originally built it to work with vending machines. So like
wild,
some really simple logic going
maybe
on
some
there.
Of those like crazy Japanese vending machines that like you can buy anything
physical. Yeah.
You've been there.
I have.
Mr.
They're definitely not using BrightScript, I can tell you that. If I'm not misunderstood, didn't you write a promises class for BrightScript? That you couldn't do promises with BrightScript, so Angus just wrote the promises library in BrightScript.
Explain that. That's like JavaScript promises, right? Is that the idea that something is going to be...
Yeah, JavaScript promise is basically because the language is asynchronous, you know, in nature. So if you have to make a connection out to, you know, say, like, get some type of content, you have to wait for that to come back. Meanwhile, your code is still running, it's still continuing. So a promise is basically a concept, or sometimes it's referred to as deferred. It's basically an object that knows how to wait for it. And by the time the request comes back, it will resolve the promise, and you'll be able to continue with whatever you're doing.
Is there a reason that the Roku apps, many of them kind of look alike and they're not all that great?
Yeah, the Roku sort of has a few templates that you would use, and that's sort of like the easier way that you can have like certain looks and feels, and that's probably why most of the apps end up looking like the same. So you have like the poster view and the player view.
Now, did you get to use these templates?
We did for a few things, but for the most part, we basically build it from scratch. So we would actually overlay...
Fancy.
Yeah, we basically overlay image on top of image to create the player. So the whole player itself, like every single thing that you see on the player, like the progress bar, is actually one image overlay on top of another image, or a background color overlay on top of another background color. And it, you know, building the player end up requiring, say, like 10 to 20 layers of images.
Sounds easy.
So you're going to do it next tour? It's already done? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll have an app written by the time this is released. Ben Chavez, I see you over there catching Pokemon. And you had your hand up earlier. What are your thoughts?
On what?
On what you had your hand up for.
Excited to talk. I think you were Wikipediaing and telling us about the history of the
You're mentioning what language Angus was using for his Euler.
Yeah. Okay.
And I was just going to say that I like to use Bash for my Euler.
Oh, okay.
That's good. That was fun.
You also use Vim.
Nah,
right?
Yeah.
Of course I used Vim.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
I actually wrote mine in Java, which I found to be really interesting, because as it turns out, I'm essentially writing Java when I'm doing my Drupal 8 coding now. So, is that good?
Sure.
I also was learning some Android development at the time, so it all worked out. Betty, mobile developers have it tough too. How is it different writing a mobile app than something on the internet, a website?
Well, with a website, it typically runs on a phone or a computer. So when you're writing a website, there are things you just don't consider. Compared to when you are writing something for a device with limited memory. So there's that restriction.
Okay. Also, when you write things for a device, you also can think about other things that device might have and then get super fancy, like location.
Yeah. I'll type to, obviously HTML5 and JavaScript have location, but I'm assuming there are different sensors that your apps have access to, correct?
HTML5 doesn't have a GPS unit attached to it, or?
There's an API for it, I believe.
Okay.
Right? Look at me. Mateo's nodding his head.
Mateo's nodding his head, so that means yes.
Thanks.
So, there's other things you can do within mobile development that can be interesting, too.
Yeah, so you really have to take advantage of the hardware that's available to you. So for the TV app, we have to consider the remote control. We can't just go there, touch the screen, or move a mouse around. We have to handle every key press that's possible, and then we have to consider all the different kinds of remote controls that are available.
So how do you test this? Obviously, do you have, 16 TVs in your house and, a couple hundred remote controls? Because that would be, pretty awesome.
Typically, because we are using React, we can test through our browser, but then we have an emulator, which we have to test.
A television emulator?
Yes, it's very bizarre. You boot it up on your computer, and it's a picture of a television with a remote control, and the app runs in that television.
And the client didn't send you a TV, though?
No, I have a TV, but it's the dev cycle is quicker sometimes just to run it on the emulator or test on the web first.
All right. A lot of times mobile developers have a similar emulator too, right? I know that Android development, you have an Android emulator. It boots up and it looks like a little phone that's on your computer screen and does stuff, right? Similar.
Yeah. In the case of Android, though, definitely use a device for testing because the emulator just takes a very long time. There's a great third-party emulator that you can use called Genymotion, which I'm a big fan of.
Yeah. It's been a few years since I've done that, and I remember the emulator kept getting worse and worse as the versions increased. So, Angus, you've also had a desk full of Rokus. I saw a picture once, that was a requirement because they're all a little bit different and you need your app to work well across different
right.
ways.
At one point,
things.
I think I end up with maybe 4 Rokus on my desk at the same time.
Did you have them hooked up to different TVs?
They all go to the same place. Okay. I don't have the luxury of having 4 TVs hooking up to
but
4
Rokus. But a
Roku
is a fairly inexpensive device. It could be 30-40 bucks, right?
Maybe the cheaper ones. I paid 100, and the more expensive ones are around $150 US.
Yeah, and basically you have the newer models that those are actually the easier one to deal with. They have better memory management, and they generally just run faster, and they also are HD instead of the 480 by 720 SD. But during the development of Roku, you will have to take care of all those devices in order to actually release your channel.
Ben, what's it like working at Lullabot and building things that aren't Drupal?
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah?
Yep.
What's awesome about it?
I get to play with new things, and I don't have to do Drupal.
What's the coolest thing about not doing Drupal, though?
when you say you don't have to do Drupal, why is Node and React and all that stuff so cool to you?
It's just solving new problems in different ways is fun. I particularly like gluing different APIs together, which is what I've been doing a lot of.
Well, that's Tugboat, right?
Yeah, Tugboat. So Tugboat glues a lot of different APIs together, like GitHub and Bitbucket and MailChimp and Docker and what else? Got drawn blanks. But I feel like I've had to learn like 100 different APIs to do this thing.
Yeah. I think it's a good time for us to be doing all these other technologies, because if you look at Drupal at the moment, Drupal 7 has been around for a while. Clients are asking about Drupal 8, but they're not super sure about it.
Some of them.
It
depends on the situation.
Yeah, I suppose.
I mean, we are building Drupal 8 for clients that have said, yes, this is how we're settling in. This is exactly our future, and not always a Drupal 8 website. Sometimes we're working with a client that is building a whole like system for their Drupal 8 because they have many websites, so they're figuring out how to integrate it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, like there's going to be like hundreds of websites, so we're kind of doing like the base distribution and.
But like you said, people are figuring stuff out. I feel like we're in a good position now because we don't have to figure anything out. We're just doing other stuff while you guys figure it out. Then we'll come back when you figured it out, just pick up.
So like my understanding is like we're doing all the hard work while you guys are just like sitting there and we're
watching TV. I heard they're watching TV.
Playing with like emulators and stuff. Yeah,
exactly.
I actually believe that all these technologies like complement our Drupal knowledge as developers, because when you learn to solve, like Ben was saying, the same problem but with a different tool or with a different perspective, you kind of learn more about the problem. And when you learn more about the problem, you see these different angles that maybe you were taking for granted because you were using Drupal, and now you understand a little bit better, and you don't need to use always the same tool for solving every problem. And sometimes you just can't afford, because of, I don't know, maybe performance problems, you can't afford to do Drupal Bootstrap, because Drupal is a very powerful tool that can do almost anything, including your breakfast. But maybe can be the fastest thing ever. So that's when it comes handy to have like a Node.js app or a Silex app or whatever framework. This is backend technologies, and in the front end, if you decouple Drupal, you have like the ability of replacing the Drupal theme system, which also comes with a lot of assumptions with a front end framework like React, like Angular, etc.
Matteo, have we ever decoupled before?
That's the softball.
Have we ever built a decoupled website?
We have. As in Lullabot, we have built lullabot.com, which is a decoupled Drupal website, and it's pretty cool. I wasn't involved in that, and I'm actually a little bit jealous of the people that got to work on that.
I had the chance to work on a website for NBC. It was for Jimmy Fallon. So Jimmy Fallon took over the Tonight Show, and it was announced he was going to be the host of the show. And then they had to do all of the app and the website and everything on a really short time period. So there was a company that had the contract to do the website and the app and the other app and the other app and like get it all together at once. And it was a really, really tight timeline. So I ended up doing some contracting work and helping them out. And I remember doing some tickets on their video player. And then I maybe worked with them for like a week and a half and did a bunch of web services and made sure that it was returning the data it was supposed to be returning. And I was on a Scrum call and they said, hey, we launched the website. You should go check it out. And I said, oh, there's a website? What's the URL? Like I hadn't seen the website because it was a totally decoupled setup. You know, all I knew was Drupal was returning JSON and there was some other thing that was, you know, eating my JSON and making it pretty.
Right, that's exactly the point. And I was involved in that project too, and I cherish a lot of moments that we had together. And also,
I don't even remember I was there.
Yeah, I do. And I also like to think that just a little bit of the success that Jimmy Fallon had, it was because of that side.
Hey, you know we won an Emmy, right?
We did, yes.
Best digital experience. At least they did, and we were a part of it, I felt like, in a little bit anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was Lullabot's first decoupled website? I know that we've decoupled parts of websites, maybe complete websites for a while here. Does anybody know?
I think that at least I was involved in MSNBC for a while, and we did what I think that today we call it progressively decoupled.
Yeah, there were parts of it, right? I was on MSNBC for a while too, and it wasn't really decoupled. But
what year was that? Like, when did MSNBC launch?
Maybe Joe knows this.
13. Yeah, 2013. And they've been doing decoupling other parts of it since then. And they're using AngularJS, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, that was the menu and a couple other parts. That
yeah, and they ended up doing like the video player and more stuff after that as well. So slowly they've been like decoupling parts away from Drupal.
Hey, the video player,
but not the whole
page.
That
was me. All my code got yanked out.
I'm sorry.
It sounds like a topic for a future podcast here.
Yeah, sure. Okay. There's a lot going into that.
JavaScript framework fight.
Decoupled, headless, all that crap.
Yeah, I worked a while on Pac-12, the sports athletic conference for colleges, and they had some things that were, I suppose, progressively decoupled, if that's the word you want to use.
I think John Hanna's got a great article up on Lullabot.com's blog. In fact, I think it's got the most hits out of all of our articles, and it compares JavaScript frameworks and which is best for decoupling and that kind of stuff.
That's been pretty fun to watch, actually. Wes Ruvalcaba has written a couple of CSS articles that have gotten some social media attention, and he's been watching the statistics very closely. He's really trying to, you know, outdo
John. In fact, isn't he writing most of the, like, event tracking for our analytics? It's a bit iffy.
He is, yeah. Isn't he? Yeah.
Oh. That's another topic.
Yeah. Analytics?
Yeah, like analytics and measuring A/B tests. I mean, that's a science.
He did change the bounce rate of lullabot.com by about 85%.
Did he really? I thought he failed at that.
Yeah, no, he changed because he changed the way we were measuring bounces. So.
Nice.
Which I suppose is fair, but you know, it doesn't mean exactly what you think it means.
Yeah. It's funny talking about all these new technologies and stuff. You think about how quickly they change. We were on AngularJS and MSNBC in 2013, and now we're doing React. We did Roku. We're doing all these different things. But since the beginning, we've been doing Drupal, and that hasn't changed. Obviously, the versioning has changed.
Well, Lullabot's been around for 10 and a half, for almost 11 years
now.
And
it makes you realize that actually Drupal is here to stay, and the majority of our work is from Drupal. Sure. These new tools are fun, and you know, we get some clients from it, but it always comes back to Drupal in some way or another, right?
So, Betty Tran, what's the next big thing? That's a big question.
She knows.
Yeah.
I foresee more JavaScript frameworks for building mobile applications.
How about a CMS for JavaScript? Something similar to Drupal, using technologies that are amazing. Mateo's shaking his finger. Why not? No?
Why would you have that? I mean, you have Drupal. You can decouple Drupal.
Sure.
And
you're starting to sound like a fanboy, though. Come on.
Well, maybe I am. But you know what? I believe that we don't need to rebuild every tool in every new technology just because. And I like to think that the expertise that we have been building all these years kind of pays off. And we can actually focus on the problems that clients are having, like how can I engage this audience a little bit better, how can I measure success, because that's a really important thing, like how do I place all these new libraries and technologies into the new front end that we're building, or the new app, and how do I make a multi-digital experience, like I have a Roku app, an iOS app, a web app, etc., talk together with all these services. And if you take for granted everything that Drupal does, then that's when you can focus on all that. But yeah, I'm a fanboy.
Angus, I have a question for you, and maybe others can at the table can answer too. But one thing that somebody I used to work with told me was, syntax is syntax. Like, once you've learned to be a good coder in the first place, you can pick up anything. You believe that's true?
Yeah, I would tend to agree with it. A lot of my skill, when I tell people, is my skill is the skill of learning.
I'm able to just learn and pick up anything. So like having some syntax is a little bit better than other syntaxes, but you know, we all have our preferences. But
what's your preference?
To be honest, like now that I'm working on with Swift, there's actually a lot of let's call them apple sugar that they have put in with the Swift language. So for example, like variables can be defined as optional so that your compiler can actually catch the error of, you know, accessing an empty memory slot, you know, before you even run your app. So there's a lot of things that I'm taking for granted now that is available in Swift that is definitely not available in PHP and it could be pretty terrible in Roku.
So Ben Chavez, a guy who will never call Malik without calling free. So any thoughts on that as far as, you know, learning things? I mean, you two, I think Angus, I mean, everybody here at the table, you five fine individuals. It's like I have this thought of the scene from The Matrix where you're seated at the table and plugged into your brain and I know Kung Fu.
I think that's a really great skill to have, just to be able to pick up different
Kung
technologies.
Fu?
Yeah, it's Kung Fu. Kung Fu is a really great skill to have. That's one of the things that, you know, that was really stressed in my education, is that once you learn the logic, then, I mean, a language is a language. You pick up the syntax as you go.
I would say that if you, as a developer, have the opportunity to work professionally in something else that is outside of your comfort zone, if you are a Drupal developer and you have the opportunity to write a Node.js app or to write functional programming in Elm or Haskell or whatever, take the chance and do it, because as they were saying, it kind of stretches your brain. It makes you think beyond the language and the syntax sugar that the language builds and all the framework and Drupalisms that we are used and love.
Well, that syntax sugar, like Angus was talking about, I mean, you can really learn to appreciate them when you've seen the dark side of.
Yeah, exactly. But you cannot rely on that. I mean, you need to know what happened behind the scenes. Like at the end, we are streaming text to a browser if we are building a web app, and what happens from when someone is typing the content to when a user happens to have that string streamed to their website, to their browser, well, there's a lot in there. And if you have all these different technologies that help you, sometimes it's easy to forget what's happening. So,
Joe Fenda?
There's a lot of hipsters out there. There's too many people trying to make all these new cool things, and it's good and well, like, learning them, but don't get caught up in them. And I always think that you should use the right tool for the right job, as long as it's JavaScript or React.
Says the hipster. So Betty, any final thoughts?
If all fails, just Google what you don't know.
Yeah. And then you find that one person who said, I have this problem, and then like a day later says, oh, I figured it out, never mind. That could be frustrating.
The worst is when you do a Google search and there's one result in a different language.
Mm. See, I've done a Google search and it's me asking the question like 5 years ago. It's like, ah, crap.
So or the worst is when you search for a problem, it end up being your own article on lullabot.com.
Hey, that's cool. I mean, that's kind of fun, right? So, Mike, it's...
Did you edit your article?
With the solution?
Nope. There was no solution. It was just picking up the keyword.
It's impossible. It's already done. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks.
So now it's dinner. Hey.
Just get up close to that, right? So it's not going to bite you.
It may bite you.